Welcome to the Hackadoon podcast. And today we have a couple of special guests with us. These are the guys who are building the protocol blockchain services platform, which would be helpful for enterprises to implement blockchain technologies into their own ecosystems. Representing protocol would be Lars Rensik, the CEO, and the protocol has been developed on this blockchain called Arc, and the senior brand manager at Arc, Justin Rankin, would also be joining us. Without further ado, hello guys, how are you guys doing?
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks for having us on.
Definitely. So Justin, let's like start with you. What's that background over there which has a GTA San Andreas look, but it has your like company initials? What does that signify?
Oh, are you talking about my background here? Oh yeah, I put this together this year. I've actually been running the YouTube channel for Arc.io, the Arc ecosystem. Mm-hmm. That's at youtube.arc.io for a few years now. But now we're putting out more content, especially content that highlights Arc technology in action. Mm-hmm. Like for example, a decentralized messenger service, as well as games played on the blockchain. And so I put together this little background here. We've got the ticker symbol ARC right here. And we also have this poster that was commissioned by one of the delegates on the ARC public network. The ARC network is delegated proof of stake. We'll get into that a little bit probably later on. Right. But this poster was commissioned by one of the delegates that operates the network that handles like artistic expressions and commissions and things like that. Uh-huh. And also have this plate here, commemorative plate, with the ARC logo on it, as well as the coffee mug. It's really more for aesthetic reasons. Yeah. But this is my day-to-day office that I'm working in here today. So.
Right. And thank you for not drawing attention to the house plan that you also have.
I'll leave it to speculation whether it's real or fake, but it's there.
So. Yeah. So jumping right in. So Lars, I know that you must have heard this question a million times. What was the need for building protocol? Walk us through what it does and how does it help enterprises?
Sure, no problem. If you look at the ARC vision in itself, it's always about simplicity for everyone. Mm-hmm. And protocol is really simplicity for enterprises. So having blockchain solutions for enterprises, that's the key vision, is simplicity for everyone. So the ARC tech for 3 years, or ARC has been developed for 3 years, now 4 years already. Mm-hmm. We decided, okay, now it's time to go also after that enterprise market. Because now we feel, after beta testing it for years, that it's grown enough to use it in the enterprise sector. So a year ago, we said, okay, let's, over a year and a half ago, we decided, let's go ahead with that. Beginning of this year, I started going full-time from my position at Arc to protocol. Mm-hmm. I said, let's go develop protocol further. So what we are doing is basically help enterprises bring blockchain solutions to their own, implement to their own businesses, mm-hmm. where we do a range of services from digital advisory to blockchain consulting, engineering.
Got it. And how do you like feel about the questions that I'm sure you must be feeling about comparisons to Hyperledger, comparison to other enterprise blockchain solutions?
Yeah, sure. No problem. I think our vision of simplicity is really also about implementing, making it easy to implement, making it not easy to use. So if you look at other blockchain solutions, you really need to be your own expert to use it and develop it or work with it. And yeah, so you are spending months working and developing on it, and then you still can start with it. And with our solution, you can jump in or reach out to us and we can help you and you can implement it within months. So it's mm-hmm. a really shorter timeline, easier to use. Also, if you look at legacy software each enterprise is using right now and is working with, the enterprise solution, I would say you have to jump over. And with ours, it's really, because of the interoperability, you can really attach to it and don't have to throw away your legacy, but you can still use your legacy in that sense. In that way, that our blockchain tech is also really plug and play build. Mm-hmm. But it's a really combination of all the key message of being simple. Mm-hmm. So that's, I would say, is the key understanding of that.
Got it. Justin, moving over to you. So Arc has this very catchy tagline of sorts, which says point-click blockchain. What does that mean?
I do like to start off by describing it literally. Point-click blockchain. Now, when blockchain technology was first growing, like earlier in this decade, like Lars was explaining, it's really you have to be your own expert to participate in the ecosystem. And it was these cypherpunks who were getting together to have all of these discussions and design architectures for networks that can satisfy the needs of users, developers, and enterprises. But I feel just as the internet developed into a more easy to use platform and tool that really benefited everyone on the planet that can be connected to the internet, it's more like we need to do that with blockchain as well. So point-click blockchain was a previous slogan that we were using that really alluded to our flagship product, the Deployer, which allows developers of all walks of life to create, customize, and deploy standalone interoperable blockchains. They're able to do this with a graphical user interface that allows them to literally point and click with a mouse, use the parameters to customize the different aspects of their chain, change the performance of their chain, and then deploy. Now, we're working on a new version of the Deployer coming out during Q4 of 2020 that allows users to do this with one click. So previously, it was easier than usual to deploy a blockchain with our 2019 version, but it was more along the lines of point-click blockchain. Right. So now, with this new version, I feel that we're really bringing it home to point-click blockchain, where you can deploy a chain with one click and handle many different processes in the background.
Definitely, and more power to you guys, because you missed out a crucial step in between. It was point click, pray to God everything works, and then blockchain.
Yeah, I get it.
So yeah, when we talk about protocol and we talk about how enterprises can use it, but then we hear in the news things such as banks are still using the COBOL programming language as some of the backend infrastructure, and getting them to use the blockchain could be something that they might not be open to just because of the resistance to change. Do you guys have any ideas for overcoming those problems?
Yeah, sure. Just like I mentioned before, is that because you look at all the solutions, it's really their own standalone solution, which you need to implement and that's it, and you can't connect it. With our solution, it's also interoperable, so you can still use that legacy COBOL software. Yeah, it's not a problem because you can still have RTEC working next to it. It's an enhancement instead of a standalone version. So it's really, we really build it that it would be implemented within the ecosystem and fit in the ecosystem instead of being a standalone doing its own thing. That's also why we had our vision of it needs to be simple, but that's also being simple in being usable in their current state.
So I don't think that you want to rip out the band-aid. You want to help out the legacy systems as well as have the new ones.
Yeah, exactly. You can always switch over later on. That's not a problem. But for now, you can easily attach it and work next to it instead of having to rip out right away. Rip out the band-aid, like you said. No, it's just have the old legacy working and you attach our chain to it and it's not a problem at all.
Got it. In terms of use cases, so everybody knows about the supply chain, at least everybody in the blockchain space knows, my mom.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's the supply chain, it's the banking infrastructure, it's last mile connectivities and all of those things. So what is the perfect use case for protocol?
Right now, it's also one of the areas we're going after is the sporting industry. Because also you see right now in the current climate is that the sporting industry is also having troubles with COVID. That if you look at their revenue, for example, 1/3 of their revenue in the Netherlands, at least for football clubs, comes from stadiums. And of course, no stadiums are filled here at all. So they are empty. So there's loss there. So with our tech, it's instead of a nice to have, it's becoming more like a need to have. If you look at, for example, fan tokens, NFT trading cards. So it's a really developing idea around that you can still engage with your fans, right? Because right now they are not coming to your stadiums, they are not interacting every week to coming to there. They still see the games, but it's from home. So it's a really different experience. With our solutions, you really could bring that value back to your fans. And it's also not a case of COVID alone. This still would be a great use case. If you look at the generation, the newer generations, more tech-savvy generation, they're also more into esports than sports right now. So the sport teams are really looking to engage more with those generations. So this is also a step towards going to them.
Got it. Justin, You must have heard about a lot of comparisons with the Ethereum blockchain, the Cardano blockchain, Stellar, although like Stellar is not a blockchain, Bitcoin itself. How would you like describe ARC as simple as we can explain Bitcoin and Ethereum? I'll give you examples. Bitcoin, digital gold. Ethereum, computer of sorts that has automations or smart contracts. How do you explain what you guys do?
So from the perspective of the ARC public network, to put it as simply as you put in those other examples, I would probably go with something like blockchain switchboard. So what we do is we focus on interoperability, but also sovereignty, where the different communities that are using our technology are allowed to exist within their own standalone separate blockchain, and they're able to transact within their community without having a central mainnet in between two different community members. And that mainnet is run by operators that may not have anything to do with that community. So you were talking earlier about comparing ARC with Ethereum and other popular blockchains that are out there. Incidentally, I did run a special comparison episode on my podcast that I do every Friday on podcast.arc.io. This most recent episode 95 focused on comparing ARC with Ethereum. Now, that episode is almost 1 hour long, but it's an excellent episode. So I will not be like paraphrasing the entire thing here today, but you can always check that out on your own time. However, some key takeaways from that episode would be something like assessing Ethereum as one main network where everyone is sharing the same network resources. And because of this, it can cause congestion and scalability issues that we saw in 2017 with the decentralized app CryptoKitties nearly grinding the Ethereum network to a halt, as well as this year with the DeFi craze, causing very high fees on the blockchain of Ethereum, upwards of sometimes $50 for a transaction. When these types of things are affecting the entire network, it seems to me as a bit unfair where you have somebody that just wants to use the network for day-to-day transactions, maybe even small transactions, and this fee structure being global, as well as one network running everything, makes it very prohibitive to do day-to-day business. Those types of topics and more are discussed in this podcast episode that I was talking about.
Let's try to build up on a lot of that problem also arises from the debate between proof of work and proof of stake. Although in my opinion, both of them will always lead to a certain level of inequality because people with more resources, whether it be computing power or whether it be tokens or the coins, they would always have more votes. How do you guys beat that system of, let's call it, systemic inequality, for a lack of a better word?
That's a very excellent point that you made, with the consensus mechanisms playing a role. Now, like when you look at the Ethereum blockchain, for example, what comes to mind for me is that it does make sense to have one network with many tokens sitting on top of it, because each of these communities that have these ERC-20 tokens are leasing the security of a very large proof of work. Right. This is something that's difficult to do if you're a young chain with a small community. It's very difficult to run a proof of work blockchain without getting attacked, like 51% attacked.
Right.
We saw Vertcoin getting attacked multiple times. We've even seen some larger proof of work altcoins getting 51% attacked.
Right.
So to pool together the security resources in something like that makes sense, but it only makes sense and stops making sense at proof of work. ARC is delegated proof of stake. So our consensus mechanism allows a new network to be secure when it's small, because it doesn't require the computing power that you would need to have a secure proof of work chain. Now, to address the second part of your point, when you were talking about how do we address the inequality in terms of like token holders and blah, blah, blah. It's interesting that with Ethereum, it's all about hash rate. And with some large proof of stake networks, it's all about holding the mainnet coin, the coin that's responsible for the governance of the main network. However, with ARC's multi-chain approach and ecosystem, each blockchain is standalone. So it's very difficult to have control over the entire ecosystem, because you would have to control 51% of the coins of every single coin in the entire ecosystem. So if there's like 1,000 blockchains in the ARC ecosystem, you would have to have 51% of all 1,000 coins. Whereas with something like with Tron, for example, you only need 51% of the Tron asset, and now you've got some heavy influence in the Tron network at that point. But that's where sovereignty comes back into play. It's allowing everyone to act as their own independent organization, country, entity, I guess you could say, which provides further protections against these inequalities that you're talking about.
Got it. Lars, since you will be the one responsible for selling the protocol to enterprise solutions, there is a concern that I have found out when speaking to such enterprises, is that every time we think that blockchain is secure, we hear about a new attack of sorts. It started with the 51% attack. By the time people understood what a 51% attack meant, we were dealing with something called as a Sybil attack. Once we started to understand what a Sybil attack meant, we hear about the parity hacks and the re-entrancy attacks. Today, we are hearing about NinjaMine tokens, and there are DeFi solutions who say we would not InstaMine. We would make sure that everything is announced fairly or whatnot. So how do you get the enterprises to trust a system where we don't even know all of the problems that already exist? We aren't talking about the ones in the future, but the ones that already exist.
Yeah, of course. But I think that's also a good difference to make with Ethereum, that they have a virtual machine. It's a solution which can slow them, but that's also can do everything, which really relates to the problems like the recent hack of EMM, where 50 million was hacked within a second. Exactly. Yeah, so with our solution, with our smart transactions, or GTI, just what's the name?
GTI, generic transaction interface. Smart transactions, for sure.
Smart transactions. Basically, what we do is that you only have a set outcome with those, which are basically smart contracts, but they are specialized transactions that do one thing, that have one certain set of outcome. So it's Turing complete instead of not Turing complete, which means that it's only going to do A, B, or 1, 2, 3, instead of where one can also can be A, or can be C, or can be D, whatever it is. For our solution, specialized, which makes it also simple, it can only do this because of with Ethereum, it can do everything on that chain. Every solution can be built on that. Our chains, of because everyone of our own solution or our own company or our own community can make their own chain. They can specialize their chain to do one certain thing that they want to have. With that, there's much less possibilities of attack because there is no smart contract risk in that sense. There, it doesn't exist in a system.
Got it. And how do you explain that to the sales representatives or the business development executives at enterprises? Because they need to understand blockchain to get these things. And if they do, they might ask this question. Okay, I'm sorry. Like, please go ahead.
No, sure. No, I think the main major thing to also understand is that blockchain isn't cryptocurrencies. I think that's the misconception. That's the Bitcoin, Ponzi scheme stuff. Yeah. That's the number thing. And that's the basic understanding is just educate them that it's not only a cryptocurrency. It's one of the solutions that you can provide with it. So there are much more solutions that can be done. A cryptocurrency is just one of them. So that's basically educating them to see, okay, it's not what you think it is. It's something else. It's more. I had a conversation a week and a half ago with the guy, and they were in process mining, basically, which needs a lot of data, but the integrity is really low with most of the enterprises. Mm-hmm. I said, look at blockchain. That's where you can really have, after explaining what blockchain is, he said, these are basically data vaults. That's another name for how you can see that what blockchain can bring is really data integrity to enterprise solutions.
Got it. And have you ever faced questions such as comparisons to Hyperledger Fabric? It also has a modular framework similar to what you what you explain.
I would say is that also what I hear from Hyperledger is that it's not really, if you look at the documentation, for example, it's really hard to use. It's really made out of, you see that it's made by different people, different phones. Yeah, it's open source, exactly. And what we try to do is make it simple to use. So also our data quality guidelines is really well written, easy steps to follow. One font, yeah, it's really, and the way we build is really modular, so it's really plug and play. Everything can be connected, and you can basically build your own blockchain with Lego blocks.
Got it. So imagine if there is a certain enterprise which is not technologically aware. Let's say that it's a hospital, a chain of hospitals who want to implement protocol. What would you require from them? Like in terms of manpower, in terms of resources, in terms of skills?
Basically, just they're being open and sharing their information of what they have as current processes and what is their current software legacy, stuff like that. And then we can help them from A to B, because we also help with digital advisory. It's also more than blockchain. We can also help them with AI, robotics, stuff like that. It's because we also have knowledge in our team from an expert from Oracle. He worked at Oracle and Accenture, Thijs. So we also have a broader vision of digital advisory and how we can upskill a company in their overall digital legacy software. You know, how they can be ready for the next 10 to 20 years in their backend, basically. So it's just opening their books in the sense of opening what do you have on the table right now for your software? What are you doing? What are your plans? And then we can do A to B. We don't need any help in that sense. We can help the company with everything. So it's really helpful in that way. It's simplicity. So no headaches from their side.
Got it. Justin, from a branding perspective, how different do you think is branding for a cryptocurrency as compared to a product such as yours, which is a blockchain unto itself?
That's a very good question. And it's something that I'm constantly learning on a daily basis, actually. It's very different. And one of the reasons why I feel that it's challenging is that the average person has difficulty understanding the nature of what is the blockchain, who represents the blockchain, what is the asset, who represents the asset, what is the business entity responsible for maintaining the code base, who represents that, how are these all different, how do they all communicate with one another. And so that's a daily challenge, but I think that something that's really cool is that with the ARC public network, it's owned and operated by the public community. So ARC.io does not run the ARC public network, and ARC.io does not have a dominance over what takes place in terms of upgrades of the protocol and node updates and all of that. The delegates are deciding whether or not to update their nodes when new code releases come out. So there's almost like a checks and balances happening there. But in that same way, the users are actually in charge of the branding a little bit because they're creating their own content about ARC. There's an Instagram account called ARC Facts, and it's run by a community member, and they just post facts about ARC. You'll see this with many different crypto assets. And I think that's one of the main pulls for growing a community, because you feel like you matter in the community. And it's different than when you're a fan of, let's say you're a big fan of Jeep and you love the Jeep vehicles and you love driving Jeeps and you might wear the Jeep t-shirt and everything like that, but you don't really have a say in what Jeep as a company is doing or as a brand is doing. But I'm always available on Slack, which is our giant real-time chat system at slack.arc.io. I'm available on reddit.arc.io, and we actively listen to the community for ideas and things to do. And we take their feedback every month in feedback surveys as well. So I feel arc.io does act as a bit of a shepherd for the ARC ecosystem, but by no means does arc.io like the overall thought process of what people think ARC is. People have a lot of different ideas of what ARC is, and they have their own ideas on what they want to do with ARC technology. And you can launch your own blockchain in three simple steps and join the ARC ecosystem with your own customized use case, and users of ARC can participate in your use case. And we don't really have any say or control in that. So it's like the community is building the brand just as well as I am sitting here making YouTube videos and podcasts. I'm only one very small cog in the machine.
It's actually wonderful to hear that. And I was interested to know more about the number of social media channels that you guys have a presence on. I've seen like cryptocurrency projects being like, I don't want to use the word like hark, but I see them being like promoted on channels just Twitch. Cryptocurrency projects now have Discord and so on and so forth.
TikToks.
Oh my God. Yes, TikToks. But yeah.
Yeah.
So my question would be, what has Protocol and Arc found to be the place where a lot of their community resides?
Good question. Good question. I'll take the first part and then I'll throw it over to Lars on this. But
sure.
I think that there's a general consensus in the cryptoverse that Twitter is a pretty big forefront in terms of the platform where the crypto people are at.
Right.
You see a lot of very important conversations happening on Twitter between different figureheads in the crypto ecosystem. Like Vitalik is having these conversations with all these other people that are important and well-known and everything. As well as Twitter is a great way to put an opinion out there and then have people just press a button to reflect your opinion, or they can respond to it and all that. But yeah, Twitter is big and we have a very large presence on Twitter. We have very meaningful tweets that we put out regularly. And we even have a special community tool that we use to track our past activity on Twitter so that people can see what we've been up to as a project over all these years. And that's called arctimeline.com. So this is, in my opinion, I haven't seen anything else like this in the crypto space, but it's basically a website that you can go to and you can search and filter through everything we've ever tweeted. And you can see like our progress of where we've come from and where we're going and all of our different accomplishments and achievements, both within arc.io as well as within the Arc community. And so new community members who are like, what is Arc all about and what were they like back then? What have they been doing? What have they been doing during the 2018 bear market, for example? Did they just sit around and wait for the prices to go up, or did they keep working consistently, diligently? Right. This is something you can prove on arctimeline.com. So we're very proud of having that as a community resource.
Like wonderful transparency. Yes, Lars, please go ahead.
Yeah, and for our side, it's mostly, if you look protocol, we are really going after that B2C market. So we are also looking at LinkedIn, for example, and Twitter. Mm-hmm. But I think that are our main outbound channels, but also media like yourself. Like, so it's really a different, I think it's a different range. You're looking at a different scope of community you're going after. It's more of a business type of look than a community type where you look at in crypto, which is really like everyone knows each other in the crypto community, which is different, of course, in the business world, it's the same. So it's a different community in that sense.
Got it. And as a publishing platform, I'm always interested in the question, like, what could be the next area where people start to consume the content that is being created? We heard about TikToks, right? 15-second videos. We used to have Vines, 6-second.
Yeah, Vine.
Yeah.
Vine is 1,000 times cooler than TikTok, and I'm still upset that it's gone.
So. Yeah. So my question over here would be, like, do you guys see a future for the written word, as in the blogs? You guys create blogs. How much do you think that helps the adoption side of things in promoting what you guys have to say in comparison to something as a podcast, an explainer video, or something as simple? I use the word simple, but it's not simple as compared to a TikTok.
For me, I see the TikToks or the plenty videos as bites, small, easy bites to consume and, okay, get some knowledge. But if you really want to deep dive and read more into something, you need to, I personally like to read the blogs or the post on Hack Noon, for example. So I really like to deep dive in those because that gives me a more understanding, a better insight than looking at a 50 seconds video, which is just a snippet of what the real information is. I personally really like to go after that story and deep dive. That's how I got into blockchain, for example. I was working in construction, but always had an affinity for technology. And when I started looking at blockchain, I first saw some videos, and then I started to read Bitcoin white paper, and then really that kind of stuff really makes you deep dive into and really understand what it's building and what the vision is in that sense.
Wow.
And then I'd just like to add a little bit to that, where I'd like to talk about long form content, like especially videos and tutorials, workshops, streaming, that kind of thing. Like, it definitely has its place in terms of educating and getting people excited about blockchain technology. YouTube is the number two search engine in the world for a reason. And it really does offer something that you just can't get from an article in terms of eliciting an emotional response. However, that being said, the written word will always have a place for technical learning, especially for developers, because in my opinion, just from my point of view, it seems that developers really like to learn through articles and like forum posts and, oh, this person had this problem. Let me check Stack Overflow and see what was going on there. Right. Or let me check out this tutorial that I can follow at my own pace and read, skip over things really easily. Not exactly something that you can do in a video, but I think it depends on the goals that you have for a particular piece of content. And then those goals are going to give you clues as to which type of media you want to pursue there. Mm-hmm. And also podcasts do have their place as well, especially just being an ambiance of learning in the background, like you're exercising or you're cooking and you're listening to a podcast. We're actually approaching episode 100 of the Art Crypto podcast coming up soon. So yeah, that's over 2 years of episodes of people sending me messages saying, hey, that was a great episode. Yeah, I was cooking, or hey, I was driving home from work and I was listening. So that definitely has its place. I would say, as just wrapping this up, that like rich media, things like videos, TikToks, podcasts, everything that's video and audio is a very great tool to grab and excite and get them to want to learn more. But I think the real nature of the true like learning would still be taking place in the written word most of the time.
Got it. Of course, like documentations would always be there. If you want to learn a programming language, there is no better place than its documentation. But when it comes to content marketing, for example, you guys create blogs and posts and you post it across the internet. Now, a lot of the people would be finding about that on Google, and Google has that all of these like algorithms and things that, let's say, certain types of stories over others. For example, a video would always get preference over a long form blog content. Tweets which have been posted, let's say 15 minutes ago, would always get preference over stories that were written weeks ago, and so on and so forth. People could just keyword stuff and get ranked higher as compared to a really helpful article. And this has been like something that I've at least like personally feel bothersome, because now people are not focusing on creating great content. They are now focusing on great SEO. And that was the thing that I was trying to get at when I was trying to ask you guys in terms of what is the best platform where you get engagement. Is it Twitter? Is it Discord? And I really enjoyed what you guys had to say. Moving forward, what does the protocol timeline look like? What's there in store for us in 2021?
Now we are really, if you look at our timelines, like we had our hard launch. So we just really said it to the world. Of course, we had a soft launch before the summer, but that was just to the R community saying, hey, we are here. We are informing them that we are building this with, mm-hmm. and now in September, we are really bringing it into the rest of the world and the business or the enterprise market saying, hey, we exist. We have been building on the stack for 4 years already, but we also want to help you and evolve further. So that's really, I think for the rest of the year, that's basically us trying to engage with the enterprise that way. And then next year we try to get our first customers in, maybe this year already, but we really try to lean towards quality over quantity, mm-hmm. because we really want to build that vision with the company and help them excel instead of just doing a clean set. Oh, here's a blockchain solution here, go have it. No, mm-hmm. we really want to work together as partners with the company and see how they can evolve in the next 10 to 20 years instead of just doing plug and play and be gone. We want a long-term relationship. So that's why we also are working on really, like I said, quality over quantity.
And what does the protocol technology stack look like?
For example, of course, the R core we are using right now, that's our main source of, and with, for example, for other solutions, we are looking at partners that we are having from other companies.
So what sort of are you currently looking for?
For example, like I mentioned before, was the process mining guys. I really be looking to have, so of course, when you build a blockchain, you still need to do something with that information, right? You still needs to be some layer on top that looks and builds on that data. If a sports teams wants to do something with fan engagement and you have sponsorships, mm-hmm. how do you connect the data with each other? So right. How do you say, how can a sports club say to their sponsors, okay, we had this amount of engagement, this amount of views, this amount of that. There needs to be some process of the process running on top of that of the blockchain itself. Mm-hmm. So that's one example. I can name lots more, but I think we would go too far in the deep and too much in detail with that.
No, definitely. Like, I'm interested in how ARC takes care of the consensus itself. We hear about words such as Byzantine fault tolerance and whatnot, and I wanted to hear from you guys as to how you guys are doing it differently than the others.
Yeah, sure. I think that one of the main points that differentiates ARC and the ARC approach was discussed earlier in this interview when we were talking about having a multi-chain approach. Mm-hmm. That definitely alleviates some concerns and a lot of concerns that developers have, especially as we've noticed that many developers and teams and projects have been leaving what I like to call these mainnet landlords in order to launch their own networks. Now they're
like
choosing different platforms to do that. Oh, you like that? Yes, trademark. But yeah, they're choosing different solutions to do that. They're not always choosing ARC, but for example, one project did choose ARC to launch their separate network called Compendia. At compendia.org, they went from the Neo blockchain to their own network running on ARC technology. That mainnet launch happened last month without a hitch, so things went well there. But yeah, the multi-chain approach really does solve a lot of the issues that developers are coming into contact with when they're deploying their solutions. Now, one of the unfortunate things is that a lot of developers and teams aren't fully researching the architecture of these different blockchain frameworks. And then they're realizing the shortcomings a little too late when like they already have like thousands of users and they're already integrated with like MetaMask and all these other things. And they've trained their staff to integrate with the Ethereum code base and everything, work with Solidity, which is a standalone language that's difficult to learn and use and subject to security vulnerabilities and stuff like that. And now it's time for them to be like, oh crap, we probably should have just had our own network and all that. And now they have to research that. And there you go. So in that episode 95 of the podcast, I talk about how Ethereum's like a big incubator. Like it gets these projects started, yeah. It gets them excited about blockchain, but they eventually outgrow the entire network. And then they have to find their own solution and spread their wings and fly. Protocol is right there waiting for them when they start to ask the big questions about, will this scale? What will mm-hmm. happen if we get 1 million users in the next month? Like that's not even possible on the Ethereum network. Mm-hmm. So these are the kinds of things that are happening. But I can tell that we're getting towards the end of this. So I just wanted to add my part of the what's coming next. So Protocol talked a little bit about that. I wanted to talk a little bit about the ARC blockchain platform and what's coming next. Of course, we have the deployer new version that we talked about earlier in the interview. Mm-hmm. That is coming soon on deployer.io, and people can sign up there to the public beta mailing list to get notified when that goes live during Q4. Also, something that we've talked nothing about in this episode, which is okay, which is called Market Square, which is the new mm-hmm. homepage for the decentralized web. It's like this cooler version of LinkedIn for the cryptoverse, I guess you could say, where mm-hmm. people can make connections, learn about different projects, businesses, applications, delegates, mm-hmm. and see what's going on in the overall crypto space, not just the ARC ecosystem. Mm-hmm. That platform is also coming to the public very soon during Q4. MarketSquare.io is the place to sign up for that mailing list. And mm-hmm. then 2021, really quickly, is simply enhancing the core for 3.0. And right now it's on 2.7. So enhancing the core for 3.0, and then also integrating an upgrade to our consensus mechanism where it will stay delegated proof of stake, but we'll introduce better finality using a Tendermint style consensus mechanism mm-hmm. so that cross-chain communication can be easier and safer. Mm-hmm. And then also working on the ARC HTLC smart bridge implementation, which will allow different blockchains in the ARC ecosystem to communicate with one another, with the ARC public network acting as a type of on-ramp, off-ramp to the entire ARC ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So those are the big things that are coming soon.
Got it. And when you talk about HTLCs, does it also lead you to the direction of layer 2 smart contracts or like layer 2 solutions?
The interesting thing about layer 2 is that it appears to me, and this is from only my point of view, that it seems like more of a crutch where it's like, oh, the main network can't sustain the scalability. So let's have another network that kind of settles on the main network so that we can have additional scalability there. But when you look at ARC's multi-chain approach, where you have sovereign blockchains that are self-contained and mm-hmm. interoperating with each other, it's almost like the layer 2 is built into the architecture as is. So like layer one of the Arc ecosystem is already separate chains. And they really only need to settle when they're transacting between one another. And each chain can handle its own particular use case, and different community members interacting with each other on that chain do not affect the scaling or performance of the main Arc public network or other Arc-based blockchains that are running. So you have peace of mind there. But this HTLC that we're talking about is really like the last staple that will stitch together the Arc ecosystem so that it can run completely autonomously.
Got it. And I'd like to have this question as the last one asked too. What does your technology stack look like?
Oh, you're asking me now this?
Yeah.
Okay, got you. So a protocol is a subsidiary of Arc.io handling enterprise blockchain solutions. So they're using the same framework that is used if you're an independent developer that wants to access Arc products. Mm-hmm. So what we call the Arc blockchain framework consists of the core as well as helpful tools that allow you to design decentralized applications using discrete smart transactions that Lars was referring to earlier in this interview. That is all done within TypeScript, which is a very popular programming language, a sibling of JavaScript. And there are over 11 million JavaScript developers worldwide. This is a very big advantage to working with the framework compared with something that has a brand new programming language that is unproven and subject to security vulnerabilities. But that was a bit too much of a jab. I take that back that last part.
It's okay.
And Ethereum has done really great things for the ecosystem of all crypto. Yeah. So I do talk a lot of good things about Ethereum in my podcast episode. So I don't want this to seem like Ethereum, like let's get them. It's more like Arc has additional tools and solutions that people can use if they need those. Now we also have in our platform a desktop wallet that can be accessed by users to connect with multiple blockchains that are powered by Arc. So you can have one application to interact with multiple blockchains, make things really simple. Mm-hmm. That wallet is integrated with the Ledger Nano hardware device for extra security. Mm-hmm. And we also have the Arc mobile wallet as well, available on iOS and Android. And a really nice looking Block Explorer that's really easy to use and understand. I've always taken our Block Explorer for granted because when I go to the Bitcoin Block Explorers, I'm like, what is actually happening? I have no idea what I'm looking at. And then I go to the Arc Explorer and I'm like, okay, here's my account. Here's my address. Here's my funds and transactions. This is what's going on. Mm-hmm. So when developers work with Arc, they get access to this ecosystem of products as well as an ecosystem of developers, users, and blockchain.
Got it. And I'd like to finish this with a fun activity of sorts. I'm sure that you guys have hundreds of unique talking points about your respective solutions. And the name of the game is that you need to start with one and the other one goes to the next. And the first one to fumble or falter or talk about something that is already being done by some other blockchain loses. Let's start with you, Justin.
Okay, so just real quick on the recap of what we're about to do. So you want us to describe our framework in a way that sets us apart from other solutions. If one of those points that we make is handled by another solution, then the game is over, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So I'm going to start with SmartBridge technology, which was the first implementation of cross-communication between two blockchains with completely disparate protocols. SmartBridge technology implementation went live on 2017, where a successful connection between Arc public network and Ethereum was made, where you can trigger an Arc transaction to cause a smart contract to fire off on Ethereum. That was unique and cool.
Nice save there. For a second, I thought you were going towards cross-chain swaps, but you made...
No. Yeah, sure. I would say the smart transactions, instead of having smart contracts, you have smart transactions where you really specify one solution doing one thing instead of going after where you have a platform that can do everything. So you have a big freighter moving a small box. With our solution, you have somebody on a bicycle moving a small box, because it's more energy efficient and more better for the system. So I would say smart transactions.
Got it. Can you tell us an example of how a smart transaction works? A lot of us might not know that.
For example, what we have with our public network is, for example, where with dedicated proof of stake, there needs to be voted on delegates. So you have a special type that where you as a wallet holder vote for the delegate. If you want to say, of course, a send transaction is the most basic one, that your tokens from A to B is a transaction. So basically doing one thing or doing automatic payouts, like for example, you want to say if you for example have a lease car and the lease company gets the money, but they need to also pay the bank, but also go to the next one. You can bake in the transaction itself. Okay, 10% goes to the rental company, 10% goes to the insurance, 10% goes to the bank. So stuff like that you can easily implement and do it automatically, where it's just like a smart contract, but only simpler and easier and better.
Got it. I'll grant you that.
All right, I got one. So our desktop wallet recently released a version earlier this year that allowed plugins to be used directly within the desktop wallet. Now, plugins are no unique thing, and we know what they are, just like Google Chrome extensions are a thing. Mm-hmm. However, in a crypto desktop wallet that is the official wallet of the project itself, we have yet to see a plugin system that allows third-party plugin providers to make available plugins to desktop wallet users. So in our wallet, you have the ability to install plugins where you can play blockchain-powered games directly inside the desktop wallet. Mm-hmm. You can use the Explorer directly within the wallet. You can import additional avatar images. You can run, I think there's a plugin for searching the blockchain as well. But this plugin system is really cool, and we have plans to expand that so that the ecosystem can actually fulfill its own needs. Mm-hmm. As there's a need to do a certain thing within the wallet, developers can come forward and release plugins for doing that particular thing. I thought that was pretty cool. And we made an announcement on that on our blog at blog.arc.io.
Got it. Is that a standalone app or is it a browser-based extension? What is it?
Great question. The desktop wallet is a standalone executable for desktop and laptop computers. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a web-powered wallet. However, what's interesting is that the wallet, just like pretty much everything else, is powered by JavaScript and TypeScript, and the wallet is executing within the Node.js runtime engine so that it creates this standalone desktop application. But any web developer who wants to get into blockchain technology can do this easily because we're using languages that every web developer knows. Developing things like desktop wallet plugins are pretty simple for developers who may not even have heard of blockchain. They can interface with our API simply. They can design the front end and the back end in the same language. It's like super convenient. Mm-hmm. And we even have a program called the ARC Grants Program at arc.io/grants that can award developers up to $10,000 USD in ARC for developing things like desktop wallet plugins.
Definitely. Send us a link to that. Maybe some of the Hackanoon readers might be interested in something like that.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully. We've got funds. Our grants fund is backed by 1 million ARC. So we definitely have the resources to run a program like this. And we can't wait to see what the community comes up with.
Definitely. Back to you, Lars.
I would go further on the note of simplicity. I think simplicity, that's like the basic where we started this whole project, where we started ARC with and also protocol with, basically making it simple. Like 4 years ago when we started it, 4.5 years ago, there was no simple desktop wallet. There was no simple solution. Luckily, over the years, you see that it's changed, but that's also where we always started our idea of when we started ARC. It was also always for everyone, not only for a user to use a wallet, but also for an enterprise to implement. So that's also why we build it in a way that we are really easy to implement in the legacy system. So let's say simplicity, big simplicity, because I haven't seen it yet in crypto for a long while.
Lars actually made a really good point, because if you look at what ARC was doing like in early 2017, for example, or mid 2017, like ARC was doing stuff that was unheard of in the space in terms of like user experience, user interface, making people feel confident and secure in using this technology that seems so foreign to them at first. That's one of the main reasons why I got into ARC specifically, was because I really liked their approach of really laying it out in a clear way so that when you're sending a transaction, you're not sweating bullets like, oh, did I send this to the right person? Oh, did I paste this correctly? Oh, Did I put an extra number here or something? Like, it's all very clear and concise. And that's something that was definitely missing in the official platforms of these cryptocurrency projects. Now, granted, like, there are third-party operations, like, for example, Exodus Wallet was coming out with nice interface too, but they're a third-party wallet provider. Like, they're not their own blockchain.
Yeah.
People that are running the blockchain projects are very focused on the infrastructure and the protocols. But in terms of, okay, it's time for people to use it. No, it was like, yeah, you can read this like 20-page long tutorial on how to send a transaction or whatever, but it was not even anything close to what we were getting exposed to with ARC. And that's what really excited me, and I think a lot of people in the ARC community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's also what we are building on with protocols, bringing that now to the enterprise market. First, you saw that with the community, what Justin just mentioned. And now that step we really want to take with the enterprise market, saying blockchain isn't hard, we can help you with that. And we really make it easy to use and to understand. And for users, for example, if we implemented it with a club for their fans, the fan itself wouldn't even notice that they are using it, because they are just using the app of the club itself and not another app to install to use the blockchain solution. No, it will be integrated in the current apps they have, and they will be an add-on to that. So it will really plug in for the user. So the fan token will be in their current app, really simplistic.
I'm not using that as my turn, okay? I've got my own one that I can go with next. I just wanted to piggyback on Lars's just a little bit.
Go for it.
Okay. So I'm going to pull out the big guns and I'm going to say deploying a blockchain in one click. Deploying a blockchain in one click was a pipe dream. And it's not what you might think if you're not a developer. It's like people say, oh yeah, deploy a blockchain, go to GitHub and press fork. And then now you have your own copy of the code and then make a blockchain. It's done. No, it's not even close. Just setting up the initial nodes, setting up Genesis nodes, making them talk to each other, provisioning servers, all that stuff, as well as customizing the parameters. And depending on the code base that you're looking at, the parameters might be salted and peppered throughout the code base, where it would be very difficult for you to modify very basic parameters to your blockchain. That was like a pipe dream. And then in 2018, the first version of the deployer came out, which was command line only. And it was developed for these teams that were running hackathons to do blockchain-based competitions to create use cases and all this other stuff. They needed to be able to deploy blockchains quickly. So the deployer mm-hmm. was birthed from that idea. Later mm-hmm. on in 2019, the first graphical user interface came out, and that allowed you to customize the chain with buttons and sliders and then follow helpful guides to deploy the actual nodes and provision servers and all that stuff. And that was like light years ahead of what the industry was doing. Nobody even really was focusing on how to create your own blockchain, because everyone was so focused on having one network that does everything and mm-hmm. having all the tokens on one network, and then having these forced token economics that like hopefully will make the thing moon or whatever. But like, we were not really about that since the beginning. We were more about how do we satisfy the needs of developers, users, and enterprises by taking away those pain points. And the tokenomics will be what the tokenomics are. The ARC public network is there to help facilitate ease of use within the ecosystem and will be mm-hmm. acting as an on and off ramp. But the ARC crypto asset is not required for use in these other networks that are doing business and having their communities exchange and do transactions and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So like, in conclusion, the next version of the deployer that I'm talking about, where you can deploy it in one click for free and there's no cost, there's no pay us $90,000 and then you can deploy a blockchain in one click. No, you just configure it, you customize it, you get mm-hmm. to the part where it's time to deploy, you press deploy and it deploys. Bring me another project that you can do that with and I'll be quiet. But for now, that's my turn.
Nice guy.
Okay. What I would say is also bringing real value to business from a critical perspective. If you look at what we do, is not give you a sandbox and good luck, play with it, and you might screw up, you might be lucky and bring the real value. But we look at the solutions and really are looking at the companies instead of what are your plans for the next year, or how is your digital transition looking, what are you looking at, and bringing value to that and seeing, okay, where can we help, what is the best solution, and our keenness is on blockchain. But that's not always we are not going to say, yeah, of course, you need to be using a blockchain always. No, that's not our vision. With digital advisory, we are really looking at what is the real value for your company and how can we evolve that. Yeah. And also, if you look further down that, if you have with our solution, it's not a sandbox. It's really specialized and adaptable to your use case. So it's specialized to that and not, here's your sandbox, build a, okay, you have the sandbox. Now you can make one smart contract that does your solution. And you still have that whole sandbox around you that is still working, but you have so much bloat, which is not needed at all.
Okay. I'll grant you that, although I did not understand. Too technical, too fast. If you could break it down for me, that would be really helpful.
Yeah, sure. Now, of course, I would say, let's make an easy comparison. If you look at Ethereum, for example, what I meant with the sandbox is basically it can do everything. It can do from, and if you look at shipping, you can do easy delivery by the bike where you have a mailman delivering the post, but you have the big that are going across the ocean. Ethereum does everything, right? So you have basically, it's a solution that builds everything and can do everything at the same time. With our solution, okay, what do you want to do? Do you want to do the containers over the sea? Do you want airmail? Do you want to do it the fast way? Do you want to have it by the postman, by his bike? Mm-hmm. If that's the way, that's your option, then you can build a really lean, mean, fast solution and just have that and not have a bloat of software having that freighter running while you have a shipping of a letter, right? So it's really specialized to the use case and not having everything at once.
Got it. That speaks more about Arc than about protocol. Am I right?
That's the basis of our solution, right? So for protocol, that is, in the sense, really easy. So we can adapt to the use case for the enterprises.
Got it. Now I understand better. Thank you for the explanation. Back to you, Justin.
Okay. So I'd like to say how happy I am to be able to come on here and talk at length and go into every single detail about what we're offering and what the platform is and how developers can benefit and all that. So I just want to say thank you so much. I can tell that we're getting a little bit in the long timing. So I'm going to go one more time and I'm going to close it on one that helps people learn more about Arc and as well as the protocol news coming through arc.io. And I'm going to say that something that I can use as a turn without being disqualified is arctimeline.com. Again, I said earlier that I have not seen anything like it in the crypto space. And it allows you to sort, filter, and search through all Arc achievements and accomplishments that were published on our Twitter account. And there's also categories that you can click on. So you can see, for example, all of the development related news, all of the outreach related accomplishments, all of the news relating to the Arc core, everything. And you can also like filter by time, like a time window, show me everything that happened in winter of 2017, for example. And it's all really easy, like simple user interface. Now, I wish that every crypto project had this because it would be so much easier to learn about what a project has been doing. And we really wanted to do that with Arc. And as a closing statement, I wanted to say that it was actually a body called the Arc Community Committee that made this project come to life. And it consisted of community members that were not technically oriented and were not developers and did not know how to code, but wanted to help facilitate and enable the Arc blockchain platform and spread the word however they could. Mm-hmm. So we had this project put together where sponsored and anonymous donations of Arc cryptocurrency came in. And then I managed the people who wanted to partake in the project, got the project set up. It was community developers who integrated the database and everything, and then paid out Arc. So that committee is still running to this day on discord.arc.io. And I use the committee in order to do projects where a lot of people need to do a lot of small tasks, but it adds up to a big project. Mm-hmm. And you can earn Arc by participating in that. I actually just did a payout today of 1,000 Arc to the committee for one of the projects that we're working on. So yeah, that particular resource is something unique, I feel, in the space. So that's going to be my final valid turn for that.
Got it. I'll grant you that, although like there are subreddits that pertain to the same side of things. But okay, for the value of time, like I would let you have it. Moving over to Lars, it's your turn, and it's the last one.
Yeah, I think I was already done with before here, but I really want to thank you for this interview, and also want to say that, yeah, with Protocol, we are really looking at, again, that simplicity, really helping a business easily implement and help them get further in this tech and not be scared and educated in saying, no, it's not that scary stuff of Bitcoin and Ponzi schemes. It's more than that, and can really help and value your business to be better and evolve to the next step and bring new revenue streams in that sense.
Got it. Thank you. And the moral of this exercise was that now you guys see how different is it, like speaking well about a cryptocurrency project compared to talking about a blockchain, right? In a cryptocurrency project, it's about my tokenomics are awesome, I'm backed by so and so VC, my token is a utility, not a security, and so on and so forth. And you guys had to really dig deep and find the really good points about your blockchain. With that, I'd like to call it a close. Thank you, Lars. Thank you, Justin, for being on the Hacker Noon podcast. And if you guys have any closing statements for the Hacker Noon readers, we'd be happy to pass them on.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yes, thank you so much for having us on. It's always a highlight of my day to talk about ARK with anybody who's willing to listen. I really appreciate it. I suppose some final comments for the Hacker Noon community would be to follow our blog, because our blog is specially designed to get developers excited about blockchain technology. We publish multi-part tutorial series that show ARK technology in action for specific real-world use cases. And we also break it down easily and simply what we're doing at ARK.io. So blog.ARK.io, an easy way to follow what we're publishing is by following us on Twitter. At ARK Ecosystem. You'll not only get all the announcements of our blog articles, but you'll also get announcements for the weekly podcast that I run every Friday at podcast.ark.io. And you'll also get alerts from our YouTube channel at youtube.ark.io. And yeah, if you follow us on Twitter, you're gonna get all the information you need about ARK. And we're happy to have more followers. And we're also happy to respond to any comments or questions that you have on Twitter, on Reddit at reddit.ark.io. And on our Slack at slack.ark.io, if you want to join and talk directly with me, directly with other members of the ARK team, directly with other community members, and even delegates on the ARK public network. So thanks very much again, and really appreciate it.
Thank you. And with that, we would be calling it a wrap. Thank you guys for being on the ARK podcast. Thank you.